Fugitive. A QM production. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife.
All right, hi everybody, kicking off another Tuesday evening of terrific programming on KSAV. We're going to start it off tonight with Talking Fugitive. If you want to be a part of the program, you can do so by, by calling the phone number 800-407-KSAV, 800-407-5728. If you want to participate by email, during the program only, send email to talk@ksav.org. Any other emails that you want to go to the hosts, plural, and getting more plural all the time, do it fugitive@ksav.org. Now, as I say, the hosts are getting more plentiful as we go. This is the way to get your own show. Be such a dedicated caller that they finally invite you to come on. So Ken from Vista, California, who has been a devotee of Talking Fugitive since its inception, has now been brought on board as a third host. I guess you're sort of like the Howard Cosell of Monday Night Football or whatever. So we've got Talking Fugitive with Kitty, Bob, and now Ken. So welcome to all three of you, and thank Bob, you take it away.
All righty. I'm sure we're all pretty much familiar with the old male lament when men have problems with women, in which they say women can't live with them, can't live without them. And for Richard Kimball, that is certainly true, because if Richard Kimball had to live without women in his life, he would have no life whatsoever, and he would have no TV show whatsoever. Because the fact of the matter is, there are more women in The Fugitive than in any series, any continuing series I have ever seen. And I never really realized it until a couple of weeks ago when I was, for a long time now, considering doing a topic on women of The Fugitive, how many there are. And it begins in the very first season. Indeed, it begins even before the first episode airs, because Richard Kimball is in the mess that he's in because of a woman, because of the fights he was having with his wife, which allowed him to leave the house at the worst possible time to have her get murdered and for him to be blamed for it. From there, it's just women, 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 after episode. And tonight we're going to look at the first 14 episodes of season one, in which fully two-thirds of the episodes have women either as the central character or as a very important character in those stories. And what I find very striking about this list, and I'll just go through it real quickly for anybody who did not go to our website to see what the list is, but it begins with the very first episode, the pilot episode, in Monica Wells, a woman who is being terrorized by her abusive husband. And we go from there to The Witch, which is about a troubled little girl. We go from there to The Other Side of the Mountain, about a girl living kind of a tomboy existence who wants to have a better life for herself. And then we, of course, have Never Wave Goodbye, which we've spoken about at great length, and that's Karen and Richard Kimball's very first love interest. After that, there's an episode called Smokescreen, and a woman named Doris Stillwell, who is a nurse, who helps Kimball deliver a baby. Later on, there's an episode called See Hollywood and Die, in which Kimball is taken hostage with a woman named Joanne Spencer. Later on, after that, there is an episode called Ticket to Alaska, in which there are several women on this boat, and one of them, or everybody's up for suspicion because there's a murder committed, and it turns out that one of the actual person who did it turns out to be a woman. Then we have Wilma Springer in Nightmare at Northoak, which we talked about a few weeks ago, the sheriff's wife who saves Kimball's life. After that, we have Glass Tightrope and a woman named Jenny Rowland, who is the wife of the head of a big department store who is letting another man take the rap for a crime that he committed. And then we have Ruth Norton from The Girl from Little Egypt, which we discussed in the last 2 weeks. And what is interesting about this list to me is that you have many different people here. It avoids common stereotypes about women, especially in the mid-60s. Now, today, of course, women are all over TV in positions of authority. Things are much different. But back then, and in the years before that, women were always there either as romantic interests or just to be, to get excited about things, to be in jeopardy, to start screaming or crying or whatever. But in these episodes, in these 14 episodes, you have a lot of different women. Some of them are victims. Some of them are stereotypes. Some of them are very strong. One of them is heroic. That's very unusual for that period of time in the mid-60s. And I'm always very hard on this series. I'm always talking about the things they don't do right. This is something I think they did right. They were way ahead of their time in showing women in different ways. We're going to do the first half of season one tonight, and then in 2 weeks we'll do the second half of season one. This is an interesting list. I think this list of women is rather bland, frankly, and the list that we'll do in 2 weeks is a more interesting list, more exciting women, including two of them that we love to hate. This is a kind of bland list, but it really is very representative of how women really are in the real world. So what do you think, Kitty and Ken? Is this more representative of the way life really is? And did you notice how different it is from most other series of the time?
Well, yeah, I think so, because I think women tended to be portrayed as like housewives or teachers, and they were usually in secondary roles. I think it's a very interesting pilot episode that you have, because you have this main guest star of Monica Wells, who is this abused wife. I mean, you know, just the fact of domestic violence in general, was that something that was really shown on TV much back then?
Right.
You know, and she was just basically trying to, she was, you know, you can see why she and Kimball were drawn to each other, because Monica Wells was a person who was basically, she was running for her life as well, because she was afraid that her husband was literally going to kill her. And, you know, and you saw her working, you know, here she was a mother, but she was working a very non-traditional job. She was working in a bar, not as a waitress, but she was working there in the bar playing the piano.
Right.
And so that was a very non-traditional type.
What it does? It sets the tone for the rest of the series, because she's the first person that he helps and puts himself in jeopardy. So once you see him do that, you'll know that he's going to do it for the rest of the series.
Precisely.
And after that, I wanted to ask Ken about the second episode with the little girl. Did you find her a little bit creepy the way I did?
Yeah, that was from the Twilight Zone. I did not like that episode at all. I liked the teacher.
The teacher in that episode. Yeah, but she doesn't have a very big part.
Yeah, Miss Norton.
Yeah, she. Yeah. They're really. It's kind of hinted that maybe had Kimball hung around for a while, they might have had something between them. But it doesn't really go anywhere. So I really can't consider her to be important.
Now I'd like to say though, on that episode, The Witch, I think that Jenny kind of gets a bad rap in that episode, because I think, first of all, to call the episode The Witch, I think is very harsh.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Jenny is not a little girl who's out performing satanic rituals. She's not into the occult. You know, she's a disturbed little girl who tells basically lies, because she's trying to cover up for her own mistakes and inadequacies. And, you know, and the only thing that I think maybe that people think is a little weird is that you see her talking to her doll. Well, you know, I don't think there's a little girl out there who never talked to her dolls. So I really didn't find that behavior to be that bizarre.
The way she does.
What?
They don't keep them under the water the way she does. Remember, she had the doll under the water.
Well, that's true. I guess I had forgotten about how she kept the doll under the water.
Right.
I mean, okay, that is a little strange, and you never really know why she hides the doll there. But, you know, still, I mean, I think she's just a disturbed child, and she does ultimately realize that telling lies can not only get yourself in trouble, but it gets other people in trouble as well.
Did you get the feeling the way I did that they put that episode in there to show Kimball's being able to bond with children because he was a pediatrician?
Perhaps, but I think it was also kind of a daring episode, too, because, how many shows at that time showed a show about a disturbed child? Weren't children usually seen as kind of props in shows? I mean, whereas this Jenny character really had a very substantial role in that show, and my hat is off to Gina Gillespie, who played that kid, because I thought she was very convincing at playing this little girl who was sweet and innocent one minute, but, you know, very conniving the next.
Yeah, and the actress, she never really had much of her career after that. It was kind of a surprise. You would think she would have taken it.
Yeah, but it sounds like she left the business by her own choice.
Yeah, I think when I posted the Fugitive Trivia on that, it was just she'd done a few things afterwards, but then she kind of faded away. So we go from her to Cassie on the other side of the mountain, and I'm not that crazy about this episode, except at the very end of it when she wants to go away with Kimball and he has to explain to her why it will not work. You remember that scene?
Yeah, I do remember that scene, and really, I'm with you, this episode doesn't do that much for me either. I mean, you know, I just find it bizarre in general that somebody meets a strange guy walking along the road and she all of a sudden wants to run away with him. I mean, it's, you know, why, if you want to leave somewhere that badly, leave. You don't need to grab the first, you know, the first guy that shows up and to leave with him.
That's basically what the whole episode is about. The fact that he helps convince her that she can do it on her own. But I thought that it was a rather touching scene at the end, where he has to, you know, she's sincere about wanting. It's no love interest there to me. It's just a matter of wanting to have a different kind of life than the one she's facing there. But it's, you know, it's one of those neither here nor there episodes. The second one and the third one, just neither one does that much for me. Kind of an odd way to start the series. And then, of course, we get from that to Karen and Never Wave Goodbye, and I know that Ken has absolutely nothing to say about her.
Well, I don't know that we really need to talk that much about Karen here, because we spent three shows talking about her.
I know.
Who's Karen? Actually, Bob, I'll have to disagree with you on Cassie. I liked her in that episode.
Well, I don't dislike her.
But did you notice something from that episode? You know, actually, the first two episodes, Kimball's a hero. He saves Monica Wells, and then he helps the girl.
Yeah.
But did you notice that he in the other side of the mountain, Cassie saved Kimball? Because,
true,
you know, they're in the cave, and Gerard's on the hunt.
Right.
And she pulled that log, and she really helped Kimball. That was significant.
That's true.
And I think Kimball owes a lot to Cassie and also some of the other girls in season one that really saved his life.
Well, yeah, and I think that's important in the series to show that it's not a one-way kind of thing.
And with Karen, she also saved Kimball because, remember, she got the phone call
right.
that Gerard's on the hunt, and she warned Kimball. So, in a sense, she saved Kimball, too.
Well, when we talked about her at length back when we first started the series, I said that one of the things that appeals to me about her is not just that she's obviously beautiful and it's a great love story, but the fact that she's so willing to help him. You know, as a matter of fact, she says there's a scene in which she says, "I will do whatever you want to do. I will go wherever you want to go. You make the decision. I'll go along with anything." And that's very important because, you know, he needs that. He needs that kind of support. And that's aside from the love story itself. So that's the part about her that I really like, in the fact that she will go along with it. It may not be the greatest ideas in the world, but she makes it very clear that she will go along with anything he wants to do. So in these opening episodes, I think that they really set up, like you said, the various things. Kimball helps these women, or they help him. It can go either way. And after we get to that, we go to Smokescreen, which is the episode about the forest fire, and Doris Stillwell, and I have to say that I regret to say that I really don't like her at all. I think she's she's good at what she does. She's a nurse. She goes in there and takes over. But she's very strident and very, very harsh and very nasty. Didn't you find that to be true?
Well, listen, Bob, I'm going to let them ponder that for a moment, because
okay.
We're going to take a quick time out. Ken, when we come back, I want you to tell the audience how many of these women's pictures you have nailed up to the wall down in your cubicle.
Okay.
We'll take a quick time out. We'll come back and talk some more of what, the Women of Fugitive? Is that what it is?
That's it.
All right. So stay with us on KSAV and Retro Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave White, your host of Talkin' Television with Dave White, broadcast every Tuesday from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on KSAV. Each week, television guru Tim Carmody and I discuss the programs, series, stars, and more that our audience wants to hear about. Expert guests, your phone calls and emails make this a fun 90 minutes of live programming. So schedule some time on Tuesday evenings to tune in to Talkin' Television with Dave White. We're working hard to put television on the radio.
All right. I thought I had some music on there somewhere. Okay, we are back. Music or not, Talking Fugitive with Kitty, Bob, and Ken. The list gets longer. I want to remind everybody that tonight we've got a special at 9 p.m. Pacific Coast time, following Talking Television with Dave White. It's going to be a sneak preview of a new program on KSAV called All That Jazz. And this is a live performance. I'll supply the details. I won't take up your guys' time with this. But a special tonight at 9 p.m., and I encourage everyone to tune into that. All right, let's get back here and find out what's up with the Women of Fugitive.
Okay, so Doris Stillwell is a woman in Smokescreen and who helps Richard Kimball perform what Kitty has often mentioned in her reviews and on our message board, the world's first bloodless C-section. Isn't that right, Kitty?
Yes. Yes. Basically, that this woman needs a C-section, and so Richard Kimball tells Doris that he can do it, and then they both emerge from the tent afterwards, and there's not a drop of blood on either one of them. Neither one of them even broke out into a sweat. Richard Kimball's hair isn't even slightly messed up. I mean, they look just as good as they did when they walked in there. But, I really don't have a strong opinion about Doris Stillwell one way or the other. I mean, other than the fact that at the end she did do what Kimball asked. And
yeah, but why is she so nasty?
She seemed like somebody who was just a real by-the-book person. And
you know what? She was played by Beverly Garland.
Right.
And she was in My Three Sons, and she was a lot nicer on
that. Yes, yes, I know that. But I think she was just a by-the-book kind of nurse, and, you know, when Richard said that he could deliver the baby, what actually kind of surprised me about it was that she didn't ask him some technical questions to answer, you know, to where she could say, okay, I guess you're right. I guess you are a doctor. She just kind of, in the end,
right.
Kind of took his word at face value.
Exactly. All right, let's get on to See Hollywood and Die. Here's the first real stereotype as far as women are concerned. Joanne Spencer, played by Brenda Vaccaro. And she really is a stereotype because she spends most of this episode simply crying and screaming, although I must say I don't really blame her.
I don't know that she's really crying and screaming that
well,
much.
Well, she does when
but
she,
she's,
does
but
she escapes from the car.
Yeah, she's definitely terrified out of her mind for most of the episode. And, I think in her case, she was kind of, I think she was definitely the first classic damsel in distress that Kimball came across.
Yeah, there's something of a stereotype there. I mean, she just doesn't really do anything. She's simply a victim.
Exactly. But, you know, in the end, she doesn't turn him in. She tells police that he's going the opposite direction.
Right. Do you remember a scene in that particular episode? Remember when one of the psycho killers insists that Kimball make out with her in the car. Do you remember that scene?
Yes.
She starts speculating. She starts talking to him and to herself about how her life has really been rather dull up till now, and maybe what's happening right now isn't so bad. It's a little bizarre, because I know Ken wanted to ask you a question about why you believe that all these women are like this.
I think
I answered it on the board. I said the women who want to get it on with a convicted murderer, they're just plain stupid.
But Kitty, this happens over and over again. Cassie was the first one.
She didn't know he was wanted for murder, though. Yeah.
But the question I had on the message board for you, you did answer it, but maybe you can explain it a little bit more to us men who just can't quite figure out what is it about Richard Kimball that women are immediately, right away, they're just in awe. They either like him or they want to be with him, and some of them want to run away with him.
Well, what can I say? Dysfunctionality is attracted to dysfunctionality. Let's face it, Richard Kimball has a pretty dysfunctional life, if you think about it.
Well, maybe it's because he's just dangerous, or they think he is. There's a certain amount of danger there. I mean, people say that he's a killer, but maybe he is, maybe he's not. I mean, you mentioned it yourself. Look at all the women who write to men in prison.
Yeah.
You know, they want to get married. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
I really can't understand that either, to be honest with you. But I suppose if you're leading a very boring life, you can look at it that way, but it's so irrational, it's hard to imagine why any woman would ever think that she would want to live out in the streets like he does and have to wonder about the next dollar and the next meal is beyond me. But, you know, there's no explaining that. But it's at the core of the series, because if indeed you had a series where every woman he meets ran away from him, you wouldn't have much of a show. So in order to have all this interaction, he has to be appealing in a kind of bizarre way, even though you wouldn't think that he would be. Okay, so before we run out of time here, we have some other people on the list. We have Adrian Banning, which is in one of my most hated episodes, Ticket to Alaska.
Yeah.
And that's just a complete bore to me. That episode just, you know, I would never watch it unless you held a gun to my head. I'm just not going to watch that. It's just too boring. And she's just one of many characters, and she's over the top. And who cares who committed the crime? I really don't care. And that's the problem. Besides, Kimball doesn't belong on a boat going to Alaska anyways. Absurd. After that, we have Wilma Springer. We talked about her a couple weeks ago. She's the most heroic figure so far in the series, because she really takes things into her own hands. She knows what she needs to do, and she does it, even though it's probably going to mean she goes to jail. It'll be humiliating for her husband, who's the sheriff, and I really admire her. If there's anybody on this list I really admire, it's her.
Yeah, I love her too, Bob. And, you know, the producers of the Fugitive series, they did an excellent job of casting the right people for the right roles.
Yeah.
I mean, who else could be Wilma Springer?
Nobody.
And then who else could be Karen in Never Wave Goodbye? Nobody, really.
Yeah, this is the best casting I think I've ever seen in this series.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we've got on the phone, we've got Linda from Pennsylvania.
Hi, Linda.
Linda, welcome to Talkin' Fugitive. You're apparently, they're glad to see you.
Hey, I just had a comment about why women seem to be attracted to Richard Kimball.
Okay.
I think it's because you've got this nice guy and he definitely needs help, and women just seem to like to help people that need help.
Yeah.
They're very supportive, and if anybody needs support, it's this guy. And he does happen to be kind of handsome also, so that doesn't hurt.
Well, maybe they just want to mother him. That's probably what it is.
Well, that's what I think.
Yeah.
I think there's a big mothering factor there.
Right. Right. He's kind of like a big baby. He's really pretty helpless out there in the streets.
Yeah,
and I think that's the big attraction. Now, some of them obviously are attracted for romantic reasons.
Yeah.
But other ones, like Wilma, she just wants to help him.
Right, and I think in the case of Wilma, she's actually somebody who's thought about it and thinks that maybe he really didn't kill his wife. I mean, the women that I really question their sanity on are the women who just meet Kimball. They find out not that long after they meet him he's a convicted murderer, and, you know, it's like they want to sleep with him. You know, I question women like that.
Yeah, but I want to say one thing here, and that is that one thing I really admire about the series is that they resist the temptation to make this one of those series where the main male character goes from town to town and falls in love over and over and over again. The truth of the matter is there are very few real true love stories in this series. If you really look at it, I mean, Linda, you posted on our board the other day, and you said that you're sick and tired of women falling dead at Kimball's feet. But they really don't. If you look at it more closely than that, there are only certain love stories. There's just a handful of honest, real love stories. There may be some female characters who kind of are taken by him temporarily, but they don't really go down that road, and I always admired that, that they stayed away from that temptation, because it had to be tempting to say, well, here's a good-looking guy, and everywhere he goes is going to be a love story, but he can't stay in town, he's got to leave, he's going to break hearts from place to place. They don't do that, thank goodness.
I certainly agree with you there. I think what I was complaining about on the board was somebody like in the latest episode that we were looking at that seems to think that being around a convicted murderer could be exciting. That just strikes me as terribly bizarre.
Yeah.
And it happened, you know, like in Storm Center, it was kind of like that.
Right.
And, there was another episode also where, that stupid one with Shirley Knight in.
Yeah.
The one where he was with the real convicted murderers, and Shirley Knight kind of thought it was exciting having him in the house kidnapping them.
You're talking about APB.
Yeah. I mean, I liked APB from a lot of standpoints, but that part I thought was utterly stupid.
Right. Right. It is ridiculous to think that any of these women would see any really romantic interest in a man in this kind of trouble. But that plays against what you just said, which is there's a certain... The same thing that causes you to stay away from him would be the same kind of thing that would draw women to him. So it's a mixed bag.
Uh-huh.
You never know which way it's going to go.
You know, one thing, a lot of these women, they put their trust in Kimball.
Yeah.
I mean, they're alone with him.
Yeah.
I mean, he could
That's
be guilty.
True.
Yeah, if he's
That's
a killer,
true.
You got him.
Well, then the next person on the list we have is Ginny Rowland.
She's just a social climber. She just wants to make sure that her status stays the same.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah.
But it was kind of an interesting episode to see this woman as, you know, she was definitely the conniver, and you had Leslie Nielsen as the weak husband.
Right. Let me say one thing real quick, because I know we're running out of time. In The Girl from Little Egypt, because we talked about it for 2 weeks in a row, but we never got to this part because we had other things to discuss. That's really a brother-sister relationship. That's most unusual.
Yeah.
There's no romantic interest there. In real life, Pamela Tiffin was 10 years younger than David Jansen was when they filmed that. And they kept it that way. It's strictly a brother-sister thing. He's trying to save her from going with this married man who's treating her like dirt. And there's never a hint in that entire episode that there's anything romantic between them. Even when she's on the rebound, there's nothing.
That was one of my favorite parts about that they did keep it that way.
Right.
All right.
It was a very unusual relationship for him.
Linda,
yes.
Sorry
yes.
to interrupt. The program's at an end.
Oh, darn.
Well, that's all right. They'll be back in 2 weeks, and I appreciate you calling, and I hope you'll call back at that time and join in again. For the host tonight, all of them, here we can go down the list, another excellent job. You will be back in 2 weeks with a fresh new... What's the topic going to be?
Well, it'll be Women of the Fugitive, the second half of the first season.
All right, I should have been able to figure that out. Folks, stay tuned. Perfectly Frank coming up next tonight at 7:30, talking television with Dave White. Ed Robertson will be on, Frankie Montaforte. We're going to talk crime and detection, and the special at 9 p.m. tonight, all that jazz. Stay tuned for an evening of fun on KSAV. Retro Radio.